Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another live edition of the Hybrid Squad. It's the round table. It's lockdown series, volume 2, episode 33. Spring has sprung in California, hence the wearing white. And we have a guest on who I've been looking forward to speaking to for a while now. Happy Tuesday, no matter where in the world you might be, all of our listeners across this wonderful universe. And great news for our UK friends who are coming out of lockdown and seem to have a path back to normality. Welcome to the show, PG.
Yay!
Welcome.
I don't think I'd do it right, do I? But I need lessons.
A little shimmy like that for you. Yeah, might be a good shimmy. We know which one. We know what we've got for Super Kev, Super Fit Kevin Campbell.
Oh! Yeah. Yes. And, yes. Ready.
And from the Arsenal Vision Pod, Mr. Clive Palmer's in the house, everyone. A round of applause.
Yeah, hello, hello. Thanks for inviting me. I'm looking forward to this. Can't
well,
wait.
We have been excited about you coming on. I personally haven't spoken football with you before. PG, you guys have chatted in the past, right?
Yeah, we did some AFTV together. We've done a pod together. We communicate on Twitter together. And I think Clive humours me quite a bit.
No, I don't. If you're Arsenal, you're fine by me. That's my motto, right? Simple as that.
Yeah. Keep it simple. Love it. Absolutely love it.
And but he's great. He's great. Yeah. Our listeners are going to love him tonight.
He also has some dulcet tones, by the way.
Oh. Like,
I mean, we're already being asked to smash up the likes and everything, but let's save that until you guys appreciate or agree or disagree with the pod. Clive, I'm going to start at the very tippy top here before we get stuck into some nuts and bolts of the Arsenal conversation in order for us to kind of have that discovery as we talk. Where do you sit with regards to Mikel Arteta? 11 losses, 10 wins, bottom half of the table, out of the FA Cup, still in the Europa League, struggling to create chances. Yes, we've leaked less goals. What's your take on the job he's done so far this season?
It's hard to sort of look at his job and divorce it from where the club is, right? So you have to look and ask yourself, we hired him, first-time manager. We could have got anyone in the world with more experience, but we've hired him. So we've hired a project coach, basically, yeah, for 3 to 5 years. That's what we've done. So as soon as we've hired him, in under those circumstances, you almost got to change your thought process about where we are. The big problem is that the project took a while to get going, you know, due to COVID, etc. The world sort of froze for a while. And I don't think we reacted well enough to empty the squad in the summer because the market wasn't there. There was a short pre-season. I don't think we behaved well off the pitch in the summer. You know, short, really, really poorly, in my opinion. And maybe William Saliba is a good example of us not doing our job correctly off the pitch, right? But we started, you know, so we started okay, you know, like 9 points out of 12. And then we sort of started to bumble along when we hit Leicester at home and we started to lose our confidence. And I've got to say, I've been watching Arsenal over 40 years, right? And that period before Christmas was probably, I'll tell you now, one of the lowest periods of my Arsenal watching life. Got no qualms in saying that. No qualms in saying that. And I was wondering how he's going to get an exit out of this. We recover some form. But what we've done in January is really shown what we're trying to do. And that is we reset ourselves financially by emptying the squad slightly. And I think there's a lot more to come. I mean, your listeners and viewers, they all know the score with the contracts. Contracts decide everything, right? Kev will tell you, if you're in the dressing room, everyone knows the contract length. Everyone knows when you should be spoken to, right? And if you're not being spoken to at a certain period before your contract comes to an end, you know it's time to look for other opportunities. You know what I mean? And that's how the game goes, right? So those conversations are happening right now. And I think the real time to judge will be in the summer. I'm afraid to say that's what it is. And people can say, Clive, what are you talking about, mate? We've lost 11 games. But it's the project that I think we're in. Either decide that it's not about Arteta, it's about we've decided to go for a young project guy, a project coach, to develop a new team, a new identity. And so for me, I can't judge him properly until after the summer.
So before I hand it over to the guys here, Clive, what you're saying is you judge it in the summer. So if we finish in the bottom half of the table and don't win the Europa League or get to the final, does he go? Or are you saying give him the summer and the transfer window? And if we're still in the same league position by October, November, then there's a real problem with his style of management. Can you clarify?
I think I have this little phrase, right? If he loses some big games, he'll end up in the Arsenal washing machine. When that happens, once you end up in that machine and people start to spin you around and start to question your management decisions, question your substitutions, question how you approach certain players, once you're in that machine, it won't matter what I say, because you guys know what will happen. What will happen is he'll get spun around like Emery did, and eventually we'll break him and he'll go, right? So pre-Christmas, the club showed a lot of strength to stay on board with him, even when people were wavering. But if we're here this time next year having the same conversation, I don't think nothing saves him. Nothing saves him, because by then I'm hoping, there's another thing to this. If you look at teams, say look at Everton, for example, they're investing. They are investing. So we've got some housekeeping to do. Let's see what the investment's like in the summer. If we invest, then we can have a conversation. Frank Lampard, right, he's first year at Chelsea, did fine, didn't he? When Chelsea spent 222 million, Frank Lampard was no longer the manager of Chelsea. He was the manager of 222 million pound Chelsea. That's a different judgment. If we spend money in the summer, Arteta's no longer this young project coach. He's a 150 million pound Arsenal coach. Do you see what I mean? And we expect a level of results on that basis. If he don't invest, he's just another guy we've thrown to the wolves. Simple as that. And we'll get someone else in, don't invest, and then see what happens, right? So the whole model, top to bottom, the whole project needs to be aligned. I just think he's part of that, right? And the ownership, Edu, they're all part of it. It needs to be, you know, common goals, common direction. It's not just about the manager and whether he plays a certain player in the right position.
That's interesting stuff, because, you know, I'm not an Arteta out person at all, but I am an Arteta. I've got him in the interrogation room, you know, where the spotlight flies over his head. And every single time I'm asking him a question, that spotlight hits him and he looks and he's like, I got to have good answers for this, you know, because at some point you have to question. And, you know, I kind of got ripped a little bit, and there were a lot of people agreeing with me on last night's show with Kev, because we have very differing opinions in the sense that Moyes has improved West Ham. I'm not saying West Ham have our history and pedigree, but he's improved them. They're 11 points ahead of us. Everton have improved. They have a classy manager who's won at every level as a player and a manager. I mean, that's maybe not the best example. But then when you see like Leicester City evolving under Brendan Rodgers and in the position they are, and their ownership has done a good job as well. You see Aston Villa doing well this year. You know, our new competitors are Wolves, Southampton. What's he actually done other than stop leaking goals? Because I would have rather have lost 3-0 to Manchester City and been more aggressive in that game at the weekend, Clive, versus losing 1-0 and everyone saying, well, at least we just lost 1-0. Like, that's pathetic as an Arsenal football club. Can you talk me through that a little bit?
The game of the weekend was one of the most strangest games I've seen. I think people had so many different views. And when I was preparing for the podcast to talk about it, I had to go onto the Man City sort of website to see how they saw it, because I found it really strange. I thought, I don't know about you guys, but the football we're watching at the moment is almost like academy football. I'm an academy parent. My son was in academy for 4 years. I know Kev's done something similar. And you know what I'm talking about by academy football, Kev? It's lovely shapes, moving the ball around, patterns of play.
It looks pretty
for as a passing drill.
Yeah.
But effectiveness.
Yeah. It felt a little bit like that. And, you know, if you love football like that, which I do, I find it quite interesting. But not everyone likes that. Not everyone wants to see what we saw at the weekend. It was very clinical, very technical, very much about cancelling people out, very much about, you know, the movement and the shapes and the moving off the sides, rotation was unbelievable. But I've learned about that in the last sort of 5 or 6 years. 15 years ago, I wouldn't know what I was watching. Do you see what I mean? And so it's football like that isn't for everybody. But if you put a crowd around that, I'm not sure some of those things would actually happen. right? There, it's not just us. There's a number of games which are like waiting a doctor's surgery, quite clinical, quite clean, two coaches jousting against each other. And I think Sunday was the absolute example of that. And you walked away from it feeling a little bit underwhelmed. Do you know what I mean? Underwhelmed from a spectacle point of view. And I can understand why people are slightly frustrated. When I read the Man City stuff, they were saying that in the 18 games that they've won, that was their hardest one. And we're thinking, well, crikey, we already had a shot. But we blocked them off. We did quite well in certain phases. We built the play quite nicely. But I watched it again after because I was perplexed. I genuinely was perplexed on what I saw. And once I watched it, I thought, okay, now I can see what we're doing defensively, what we're doing shape-wise, what we're doing. But we still lack quality. We still lack belief. We still lack the authority of previous Arsenal teams. And I think that's a big thing we have to overcome. And but I'm not worried yet because I still see only half a team for where we need to be. And when I see that quality players come in, then I can really, really have a look.
Do you think it'd have been different, Clive, if we'd have had Partey on Sunday?
Well, this is it, right? So you get a certain amount of money, right? You do a little bit of deal in the background to refinance the ground, etc. And you spend 45 million quid on Thomas Partey, right? No problems there. Top player. But he's your major investment, and he's a transformative centre midfielder. When you don't have him, you're basically back to where you were. You're back to where you were, manipulating four centre mids, one who's a lone player, one in Elneny's and will be in the last year of his contract, so he's in departure lounge. You got Xhaka, who's, you know, for me, still our second best centre midfielder, but lots of people don't feel that way, you know. And Danny, and so and then you got Partey, so that's your four behind the ball, right? So we don't have him enough, and we all know as soon as we see him, we go, "Ah, oh, there you go, that's a centre mid, that's what it looks like, someone who can take it, receive it, move it." And also, if you ever watch other players near him. And you know, Kev will tell you, somebody in training, when he's a good player, everyone knows immediately, and they sort of step back off him. They don't want to be embarrassed by him. Do you see what I mean? Because everyone knows he's good. We know he's good. The opposition know he's good. People trust him. They move. When they move, we go forward. It all looks better. When you have players you don't quite trust, you don't move. You wait and see what they're going to do. If you're receiving the ball standing still, bang, you get pressed. It doesn't flow, right? So we've looked a bit clunky like that. When he's there, it's great. But he's not there often enough, right? And we may not see the best of him till next season, which is a long time to wait, I'm afraid.
Yeah, indeed.
I'm depressing you, isn't I?
No, you're not depressing us. No.
Well, I'm just like mesmerised.
There's 200 plus in live chat right now. Hit that like button for us and start getting any questions or comments you want in for Clive as well. You know, Clive, Casey and I were talking last night a lot about Mikel Arteta and the style, and a lot of our listeners keep asking, the ones who are a little confused when we talk about improvement, if you take away the leaked goal side of things, do you see a style he's trying to impose? Because Casey says he does, but he doesn't have the players yet to be able to fully execute that. Do you see a style that he's trying to infuse on this team? And do you agree with Kev in the sense that he just doesn't have all of the components, hence still having to play a Xhaka, an Elneny, a Bellerin, a Holding, for example?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think you can always judge people by the first thing they do almost, right? So remember his very first game, he came out 4-2-3-1, bang. I didn't even, very first game. I thought, that's interesting, because everyone thought he's a 4-3-3 coach. And maybe he'll end up being that guy. So 4-2-3-1. It didn't work out so well in the early games. He flipped to a back three. He not only flipped to a back three, he flipped to a back three, which had a number of hybrid players in there, which meant you could also be a back four. And using Tierney and using Saka or Maitland-Niles, it was a unique system. I've never seen that before, where you literally flip in game. I thought, this guy is great. You know what I mean? This guy is great. But I just felt he was really patching up the show, right? So got us to the cup final. We bopped Chelsea. We bopped Man City. This is great. Right? Do you know what I mean? I'm thinking, what's he going to do now? I think we froze in the summer. Now we're back to the 4-2-3-1. But it looks quite, you know, lots of teams are doing this again. It's back in vogue. Number 10s are coming back into shape. Smith Rowe's come in and transformed how we look, you know, as a team, just by the way he plays and connects people. We have two people behind the ball the ball and a front four diamond, right? Very simple. One fullback pushing on to create five lanes in attack. The right back should tuck in, right? So, but we have a few problems. We have a few problems, particularly in that right defensive channel, right? We have a few problems there. We haven't quite got the consistency there. The left back, we know he's great, but he can't play every minute, three times a week. We know he was ruined at Celtic injury-wise, so he's coming to us. And we have to look after him, right? So we need some cover on that side. We need some centre mid cover because some people don't like Xhaka, which I totally understand. I like him until he does something wrong. Then I like him.
I think we're all a bit like that.
And I flip over, do you know what I mean? And then when he does something good, oh, I'm back on board again. You know, so he's one of those types of players. And the issue with Xhaka is we shouldn't be so reliant upon him. And we are. That tells you about a lack of quality and depth in that situation, right? So, and then we're talking about our forward end. And I don't know if you guys remember Baku. Remember Baku? Remember that wonderful day?
Unfortunately.
Don't!
See, that, do you remember Baku? And I just remember how Chelsea disconnected our front two and kept in the box and just made them work in crowd scenes. And I thought then, you know what, we've got to split these two up. They're not going to get us where we want to get to. You know, one of them's got to go, right? So when was Baku? Was that 2 years ago? They're both still here. And I think Aubameyang, we've chosen. He is the one we've chosen. But the other guy needs an upgrade, I'm afraid. And he needs an upgrade. And I think we need to have a centre forward that's similar in size to Aubameyang, but can receive it to his feet, doesn't mind getting kicked, turn around, run channels. But when people go into a deep block, he's happy in crowd scenes in the box. We don't have that player. Hence, we haven't fixed the situation that Villa did to us when they drop into their box after they scored the early goal. We have not got the answer. We just haven't, right? And we haven't had that for a while. So we need to fix that situation. We've got loads of attacking mids that are in good shape. We all like them, you know, Saka and Martinelli, Smith-Rowe, Odegaard, you know, even Willock's out on loan. Not sure everyone's sure about him, but he's another attacking mid. So attacking mid situation, we might need a little bit of an upgrade in one of those positions, but centre forward is key for me. Centre forward, Aubameyang's one. He's your Vardy type, but we need something else in there with a bit more power and strength and physicality to really make people think, you know what, they're coming for us today. You know, and that's what I think that's missing at the moment.
So go on, Casey.
You know what, Clive? I'm happy you're on.
I'm
hearing everything. Listen.
Who invited this guy?
You articulated fantastic. You really do articulate it fantastic. And Sophie and I and Amanda and I have spoken about getting a big centre forward who, because teams are letting us cross it because they know we've got nobody to head it. So if we did get somebody physical, I think we'll be in business. You're right, yep. Clive.
They've got to come out and meet us. They can't just sit there because we're going to do some damage. We're going to set the play, get shots from the edge of the area because we don't mind, right? So we've got a situation on the right back situation, and that's purely by how he's playing. And I think I'm going to try to explain this, right? So we have like a high-bombing left back who's quite bombastic, big crosses. We all know what he's like, right? He's tremendous, right? Up and downer. On the right-hand side, Hector's always been allowed to be the right-sided version of that. But in this system, we seem to invert him slightly. We want to tuck in. It's almost like the third centre mid. So you have Xhaka on one side tucking in. You have the centre point in Partey. And the right back, much like Cancelo, is like the right centre mid. So to be that player, you need to have a level of composure. You need to be able to stand still. You need to have all-court technique, left foot, right foot. You're like a midfielder. Mm-hmm. And Hector's been a winger as a youth. Right? And bang, bang, you can see what he was. You can see he's a sprinter, up and down, up and down. So what he likes to do is get it, punch out of my hole, I'm gone. And he just goes. But really, when you got an isolation-based winger and say Pepe, who wants to be left alone, one-on-one, much like Mahrez does, don't come near me, I need a one-on-one. And Hector's carrying the ball to him and he's bringing the cavalry with him. Do you see what I mean? And so
he's closing all the space.
He's closing all the space and all the exits. He doesn't mean to. That's what he's always done. I get it and I go. And what he does, he's playing cat and mouse with his winger. I say, you got to come with me. And he'd ring and say, you know what, mate, I know you're going to go. You're Arsenal. You're not that accurate. You're going to lose it, and we're going to transition right into your hole. I don't know if you remember Spurs away this year. Do I need to remind you what happened in that game? Yeah. You know, it's so obvious.
Where Son ran straight in there.
Yeah. He didn't even just stood there and just laughed, and they just waited, right? And so you say to yourself, well, you know what? He may not suit this team where it's going in its identity. Doesn't mean he's a bad player. It's just that I think we need something else there, something else that's more technical, more composed, and just underlap support line runs. Remember Lauren and Cole? Lauren tucked in, support line, underlapper, overlapper, Ashley Cole. Do you see what I mean? It's the balance of the two. And I just feel we got that slightly wrong on that side.
Well, it's inherited, isn't it? It's inherited.
So Casey and Clive, I want to ask you both, because Newman, one of our regular listeners, just posed the question. And this is where the Arsenal fans who are sensible are not saying Arteta out, but why do we keep doing the same thing over and over? It's like a sign of madness. Why do we continue to put crosses in the box where no one can header it? We don't have a Giroud anymore. You know, Casey and I were talking about someone like Lukaku that would fit the team based on something like that. It's big, strong, bold, has a little bit of righty KC in him, and he has the aerial ability of some of the classic kind of forwards we've seen in the Premier League. Why do we continue to cross it the way we do? We're not crossing it to feet as much. We cross it in the air as well, and nothing happens. Why do we keep doing that then?
Right. So let me give you a little bit on this, right? So I don't know if you noticed Man City at the weekend. They crossed the ball too, right? But what they do, they wait on the edge of the area and they get on the sprint. So it's not about crossing, it's about your movement in the box, right? If you're standing still, staying on someone's toes, like you're at a school break, waiting for the ball to come in, right? It's kids' football. It's just a standing jump against a guy that's probably bigger than you. If you're on the move and you're running into the box, running into lines, different movements, they call it like almost in a triangle, front post, back post, penalty spot, get a triangle in there, because Kevin Oddie, he knows all this stuff, right? So like, and that you've got a strategy then. So when you're the crosser, I can go front post, I can go back post, I can go penalty spot, but I know where I've got to go. And you've got to get timing. It's got to be certainty. So sometimes with us, we hold the ball, we dilly. The front men don't know when it's coming. They don't know when it's coming. So how can they time their moves? They can't. So that's why we get blocked out. We get blocked out. So we need a lot more certainty. So guess what?
Is that coaching though, Clive? Is that coaching versus?
It is. So a good example, two good examples, right? So you got Tierney. He's quite, you can see his game, can't you? You can see it's quite clear. He's going to get it, punch, and it's coming. We can all see exactly what he's going to do. So if I can see it on my set E, the centre forwards can see it, right? So they get into position, right? So on the right-hand side, it's a little bit more combination-based. Look at the comparison between Saka and Pepe. Both talented lefties, right? I like them both. With Saka, you can almost see what he's going to do, right? You can see when he's going to cross it. He's going to shake and bake inside. It's going in. With Pepe, he might shake and bake, take and bake, take and bake, take and bake. You see what I mean? Freeze.
Kills a striker.
You know the rules. You're thinking, Kevin, in the box, you're thinking, well, you know what? I'm going to make two runs here. I'm going to try to make one in front of him to shake him, to freeze him, get his studs in the ground. Then I'm going to move where I actually want it to be. Do you see what I mean? And then I will do my damage. If that don't come, you'll walk back. You'll fly a few nice choice words at the wide man. And then you'll do it again, right? Then after the third or fourth time, what are you going to do?
You're not making the run.
Exactly.
You stop running.
Because you don't know when it's coming in.
So let me ask you both this, and you know, I'm not as technically sound as you guys, so I ask the question in that if we're not getting penetration, Casey and Clive, from these crosses going into the box, and we can see it's not working, we can see that, you know, tactically we're inept in being able to do that. Then why, with more talented footballers at the feet, we're not playing with speed through the middle? And then bringing in the flanks and the forward line. Like, why aren't we doing that? Kev, I'll start with you, because we talked about that day when you were blown away about the speed Xhaka was playing with when he was with Thomas Partey. Is this all about Thomas Partey and not having him and not being able to do that? And so we're using the flanks overly more than we should.
If you remember when we had that conversation, Soph, we spoke about when Thomas Partey plays, he makes everybody else better.
Exactly. Yep.
Exactly.
And Xhaka doesn't need to play beside him. When you see Xhaka, Xhaka all of a sudden was ahead of him. Partey got the ball, he passed the ball forward, and that's why I was so shocked that Xhaka got the ball and played it into Pepe in the box. I was like, what's going on? And Pepe finished it off.
Yeah.
But the problem we have is when Partey's not there to get that going, and don't forget, Aubameyang's first goal against, who did he get a couple of goals against?
Leeds? The Leeds game or the
not game not beforehand? Leeds. It was the game before that, the home game before the Leeds game, where nil-nil at halftime. Partey gets the ball, Newcastle. Partey gets
that
the ball.
That was the FA Cup. Was that the FA Cup, the 3-0?
No, this was the league game.
The league game, because we played closely in that,
You're right. So he gets the ball and he plays the ball. They come to press. He plays the ball straight to Aubameyang on the left-hand side. Aubameyang run at the defender and scored. That is great play. But the problem is when Thomas Partey doesn't play there, we don't trust ourselves to play penetrating football a lot of the time. A lot of the time, they play safe. And you remember I spoke to you about when I was at Brighton, the Arsenal, and Aubameyang started at the top and Martinelli started on the left. Mm-hmm. And the first half was clunky. We were all over the place because Xhaka wants to play safe.
Yeah.
Elneny wants to play safe. Yeah. They don't want to play through teams. They want to play, I'm safe. I play it wide, and then we have to build from the wide. But the defense ain't being moved around. They could see everything coming. Once you can see everything coming, it's very difficult to unhinge a defense. Until if you start playing down the sides of them, or in, back and through, then they have a big problem. But that is our problem, because as a team, we're not good enough at the moment, unfortunately.
Clive, isn't, and KC, it's a great point, and Clive, isn't our problem as well becoming so reliant on a player? Like, we put the onus on every player. Like, Kieran Tierney comes, he has a few games, he's the future captain, he's the guy. Thomas Partey comes in, he makes a massive difference. I think it's because we've been so woeful and we have players who are lackluster in so many different positions.
We're just desperate for that stars.
Yeah, and then Thomas Partey comes in and now all of a sudden we don't have him and we can't play through the middle.
It's a simple one, right? So Kev's absolutely right about the upset and through. I've never heard anyone else say that apart from me, but that's what you play for, isn't it, Kev? You're upset and you go through on the third man run, right? So absolutely spot on. What Partey and Xhaka do is they play on the slant. They never play square. So normally Partey's slightly ahead. So when Xhaka gets the ball, he doesn't turn around because he's thinking, you know, I trust him, I'll play forward. So they don't play flat. You know what I mean by on the slant? Am I getting that right? Mm-hmm. On the slant. And so you're naturally getting that zigzag.
One's ahead. So you're not together straight.
Yeah.
There's always a balance.
Exactly. So let's give one example in Benfica, which really annoyed me. So you got Benfica rubbish, right? On the halfway line, three centre-backs, average age 106, right? We should have smashed them. But we didn't. The reason why we didn't, you know why? Because we fancied ourselves a little bit. We had a bit of space.
We were
touching. We're feeling ourselves in centre mids, dragging our foot over the ball. Partey and Xhaka on the same line, passing to each other. And then, Tobias and Xhaka on the same line, passing to each other. But Tobias has a couple of touches before he flicks it to him, nice and slow. So he's not really passing it to him. He's lending it to him. Then he goes over, comes around him. And then, because now it's gone slow, they squeeze up. And Xhaka goes backwards because he has to. And we go around. And we got our forwards up there thinking, hell yeah, come on, these lot of rubbish. Can you just get it through? And of course, we had some success. We missed open goals. But that's the difference. We were not ruthless in their box. We weren't ruthless in our build-up. Mm-hmm. And that's a really key point. Our build-up is not ruthless enough. It's not consistent enough. It's not direct enough. If you get that direction, then you're going to get forward movement. Leads, direct, fast, really quick, broken field play, one-on-one duels over the pitch. None of us had any complaints, did we? Mm-hmm. Why was it different? It looked quicker, didn't it? It looked quicker, much more penetrative. Same players. go out to Benfica. It's too easy. Oh, I tell you what, is it great? I can see my win bonus already. It didn't happen, right? And we found ourselves 1-0 down because we messed up. And then we had to save face. Now on Thursday night, the old Arsenal washing machine is revving up, right? Yeah. And Arteta's about to go in it. Because
can I just ask you,
that's trouble.
Can I just ask you, Clive, because I know, you know, Soph and Kev and I talk about this a lot. And I'm actually, normally I agree with everything Kev says, but I just don't with this situation. I have a serious problem with Aubameyang at the moment. I know what he's been through, obviously, with his family and everything. And, of course, totally understand. But there comes a time if you choose to be picked, you've got to be shown. And apart from his hat-trick, we've just not seen him most of the season. Where Lacazette, for me, and Soph, actually, has done brilliant and gets dropped. I'm not saying dropped. He could have been rested, as I said, but there comes a time when you've got to look at this and go, we can't play him through his bad bit at the moment. We haven't got time, Clive. We need the points on the board. We need to beat Benfica. We don't have anything else. So what's your view on Aubameyang and the situation he's finding himself in at the moment?
Comes back to that thing in his back pocket, right? He's got the contract. He's got the contract. The club have invested in him, so he is the future guy. So he's the guy they're going to put at the top of the list. I'm afraid that's just how it works. Now, when that team was named against City the weekend, that front four with Odegaard, Saka and Pepe, I was like pretty excited by that. As the game went on, I thought, I said this last night, I thought, you idiot. Why did you not think about this? Right? So we picked a team, that front four, which are better when we have the ball. Against Man City, we're not like to have as much of the ball. And so Lacazette is a better not having the ball striker because he can, he doesn't mind getting kicked in his ankles. He's not scared. He'll rough it up a little bit in there and he'll slow the game down, get some momentum, get free kicks and give us breathers, right? Give us breathers. And I felt Smith Rowe is a bit more rugged than Odegaard. Those two are probably a better combination for that game. So back to my upgrade situation on centre forward. We need that centre forward. Simple as that. Aubameyang now. Aubameyang is the talent. He's the franchise player, right? So, but I will say this, and I said this, I saw it at Baku. If people say to me, he's got a little bit of mental weakness on occasion, I don't say anything because I tend to agree with them, right? There are certain days when he's hot. There are certain days when he's not. Now, that happens for some strikers, but I don't know why I look at him and sometimes feel, mentally, are you quite right for this day? You know, but when that day's right, we can all see it. So what is that? That's just him and how he plays his football.
But did you feel like that last season? I didn't feel like that at all.
Well, he had backache carrying us, didn't he? Really, literally carrying us. And so he did, right? Without him, we were zero. We were zero. And, you know, we were told before he came that he had some attitude issues. We've not seen any of that.
No.
Not seen any of that. And a mate of mine, Elliot, on the podcast said something about signing his contract. He said, what do you think about him doing the contract? And I was all for it. And he said something that really stuck with me, and I hope he's not right. He said, when you give someone a contract, you give them a contract for what they're going to do for you. You don't give them a contract for what they've done.
Exactly.
And that may be a US sports thing, right? But I thought about it. And I thought, you know what? But Aubameyang's different. He's athletic. He's got good legs. You know, he's got great speed. He'll be fine. But that's been ringing around my ears ever since. You know, you disagree?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead.
Nobody gets paid forward. Nobody ever gets paid forward ever. You get paid for what you've done. And he's carried Arsenal. That's why he gets the contract. Not for what's going to come in. What's going to come in the future? We cannot even attempt to think about what's going to come because we don't know.
Well, Leno carried us as well that year, not just him.
No. So, I'm just saying.
No, he's
the question
he's right.
was about the contract, and I'm saying he got the contract because his contract was running out. It's either we're going to keep him or we're going to sell him.
Yeah.
Arsenal do not have the money to go out and buy a top centre forward, an Mbappe, for instance. Because if we're gonna change Aubameyang, Lukaku's gonna cost big money, Mbappe's gonna cost more.
Yeah.
So you have to look after the guy for what he's done. He's done it for the club, so that's why you pay him. Moving forward, it's not what he's going to do. So I just disagree with you on that solely because being in that position, I know it's not about what you can do for us. It's what you've done for us.
Now, what I was going to say to you, because I tend to agree with you. So what I said, and actually Arsenal had the option to extend his contract on the same money. They chose not to. They chose to pay him up, which lands to your point spot on, Kev. Do you see what I mean? They said, you know what? You've done good by us. We're going to pay you. We don't have to. We're going to lump on and we're going to pay you, right? So Arsenal think exactly the way Kev does. That's what they've done. In US sports terminology, you don't do that. You lose him if you can. There was no market last summer anyway, let's be honest, right? And so you lose him and then you build for the future. So my personal view is, I don't mind us keeping Aubameyang. No problem at all. He's done a lot for the club. He, you know, some points last year, he was the club. My issue, potentially, some of the other players that we've decided to go and buy or not buy or pay up. And I think that's the issue. You can't have too many of those guys in that 30 age group on top money because it creates an environment which I don't think is positive going forward.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think the one thing that we can all laud Arteta and Adu on in January is getting rid of the click. We've talked on this show a lot about Kolasinac, although he wanted to offer Mustafi a new contract. I don't know if that was just agent talk. Socrates. No. Okay, but it was reported, and there may be some credence to that. Ozil, of course, getting him off the books. I think the biggest thing with Aubameyang as well, Clive, is that a lot of fans just don't want a repetition of Ozil. He gets the big contract and then just, you know, disappeared into oblivion. I think Ozil's problems stem from the World Cup and being the scapegoat
for Germany. Absolutely agree.
And having mental struggles with that. I don't think that's kind of fair in a sense. Hold on. And I just want to get to these players that you're talking about because he still chooses to play the Wenger players, Bellerin, Xhaka, Elneny, Holding. I think Aubameyang and Lacazette fall into a completely different category. Emery obviously involved in the Tierney signing, but he's the one that chooses to play those players still. And he was a little bit forced into making some changes because of COVID to Willian. That's when we saw ESR came back from injury. He squeezed himself into the team. So I think some of the issues that Arsenal fans have is not necessarily, we know we don't have the good players, but you're the one that continues to pick Bellerin over Cedric at right back. You're the one that continues to pick Elneny over Ceballos. You're the one that continues to pick Xhaka. I think that's the issue with some of the player pool that we have where he's concerned.
Yeah, I think the alternatives are not that obvious. Do you know what I mean? There's not the gap. With Partey and Elneny, there's a gap, right? So we'd all expect Partey to play. With Cedric and Bellerin, for many people, there's no gap, right? It's just a matter of style, what you feel's right on the particular day. If it was an obvious thing, I think there'd be much more. I think he would see it too. On Xhaka, I think he deserves to play. I do. You know, I would pick him over Ceballos, for example, but it doesn't mean there's no problem with the rotation there, and we're seeing it anyway with injury. You know, when we had the Mesut Ozil discussions, the reason why it was a discussion was we had no alternative. If we had solid alternatives, it's not a discussion. Smith Rowe's coming into the club, into the team, and suddenly we're not talking about old number 10s anymore. When we got William, we didn't really have a Smith Rowe where he is right now. We didn't have a fit Martinelli. Saka's gone up again. Do you see what I mean? Pepe has, you know, found a little bit of form until the manager kicks his confidence away from him on occasion, which I don't always agree with. And so the problem statement for Willian, for example, when we got him as a free transfer, is not there today. And now we're questioning that move, right? So I think when I am quite supportive of Arteta, the coach, because I think he knows what he's doing football-wise. I cannot sit here and defend every single management decision that's happened. And he's a manager, and in the end of the day, he's responsible. Right? Whether it's done behind the scenes or with agents or director of football, in the end, you're the Arsenal manager. Coaching-wise, I support him. Management-wise, I'd like to see a little bit more pace around some of these decisions, a little bit more pace. Mm. I think we can discuss the pace, but I will caveat that by saying, in all of my life, and I'm sure in all of your lives, there's never been a year like this.
That's what I always say.
When he got the job, he was buzzing. You know, we beat Man United. He was flying. Bang, everything shut down.
Yeah.
He spent 4 months on Zoom, God's sake.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Well, when have you ever heard that in your first job? You know, you've got to deal with that. I'm not making excuses, but football just as a whole.
Everyone's dealt with that, though. Everyone's dealing with it.
Everyone's dealing with it. Football.
Some clubs better than others, Clive.
Exactly that. Some clubs better than others. West Ham have done a better job than us this year with their recruitment. Leicester, on their revenues, which are about 150 million less than us, have just built a £100 million training ground. They're flying up the league. They've got a bunch of 23-year-olds, all the right age. They've got a better recruitment strategy. And they understand what a modern football player looks like. They have three oldies in there, in Johnny Evans, Albrighton, and Vardy, and Schmeichel, probably, that's the four. That's their older statesmen. And they build around that with young, sprinting, highly motivated, I've got something to prove players. I love the way they're doing it. Absolutely love it. So I'm not going to sit here and say that we're doing it better than them, because we're not. Mm-hmm. All they're doing is what we used to do. We were the first ones with the training ground. We were the first ones doing the recruitment in Europe. We're the ones getting Colour Touré for £200,000 in a set of tracksuits and bringing him out of nowhere and then playing him. We're the ones doing all this stuff. Now everyone's copying us and doing it better than us. And we need to wake up to the fact that our competitive landscape has changed, and we can't sit there and say, we're the Arsenal and that's enough. It's not enough anymore. It's not enough.
But Clive, want to go back to what I said about Aubameyang. Whether he's got that contract, whether he's top man at the club, would you play him or would you not give Martinelli a chance?
Well, so Aubameyang plays, right? Simple as that. It's not.
But how long, Clive? How long do you play him for?
If he plays for me, right? And if he doesn't play, it's Lacazette that plays, right?
Yeah.
You got your game for your life on Thursday. Literally, the game for your life on Thursday. I like the potential of Martinelli. I really do. He's still a young man. He's just 19 years of age. He's had 8-9 months out of a knee injury. He's still a young man. I think it'd be unfair to put him in that situation on Thursday. I think we've missed some occasions to play him, like Leeds with 4-0 up.
Mm, yeah.
Why couldn't he come on that pitch? You know, yeah. He's a high-intensity player against a high-intensity team, which was quite a young team, Leeds. There's no issues for him. Play him. We're at home. Get him on the pitch. Build up his minutes. Right? So I think there's a couple of opportunities missed, but I wouldn't put him under that situation when we don't need to, when we've got Aubameyang and Lacazette sitting there. Why would we do that?
Because Aubameyang's not scoring apart from the hat-trick. So I understand...
Can they play together?
Hold on a second. I understand what you're saying about... not putting him in that situation, but he might actually thrive in that situation, because sometimes younger players take the pressure better than the older players. So I'm not I mean, look, I understand Thursday's massive, absolutely massive for us. Maybe not fair to bring him on at the start, but maybe on the bench to bring him on. But he's been on the bench and he's not being brought on, and I'm just wondering why.
Yeah, some of those occasions. The Aston Villa one, I think we messed up there. Remember Aston Villa away? And I think Leeds, I think he had an opportunity to come on there. We got Leicester on Sunday. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't have some minutes there, you know. And he may get some minutes of the weekend, because Saka, for me, Saka's the one. He's the jewel in the crown. And we are flogging him at the moment.
Yeah.
We are flogging him. And you can see the details of some of his last movements are not quite as sharp as they were. That is a huge signal of tiredness. And every time I think he's knackered, he puts one in the back of the net. Right?
Yeah, so, I know.
So it's hard. It's hard to turn away from him. But, you know.
We have to protect him, Clive, don't we? We have to protect him.
We have to.
It's not just about now.
Yeah.
We have to. About moving forward, isn't it?
We have to. If we mess up his career, I tell you what, shame on us. Shame on us.
He's the jewel in the crown. He's everything. I'm sorry if you can hear bleeps, 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 but my phone's going off the hook because there's news about Tiger Woods being involved in a very serious car accident. Hoping that he's going to be okay. So apologies if you guys can hear bleeping, because there's a lot of messages coming through right now. So let's hope that he's okay. Apparently he's in surgery right now and he had to be cut out of the vehicle. So,
Jesus.
And you know, just Saka, Casey says this all the time, Clive, on this show. You know, he played with a very young Wayne Rooney when he was coming through at Everton. Yeah. You know, he was the young guy when players like Paul Davis and Tony Adams and, you know, put their arms around him. And he talks about the pressure on himself and ESR and how, you know, we've got to be careful because we've seen this movie before with Fabregas, no, where we overplayed him, we relied on him, we made him captain, and all of a sudden, you know, he becomes this great hope. And when it doesn't work out that way, it's a tricky situation. Even though he's our best player, how can you not play him when he's become our best player? It's very difficult to manage that. And that's the part where I understand Arteta's caught between a rock and a hard place. Because if he drops him, everyone will moan that he's not playing Saka. If he plays him and overplays him, he's wearing him out.
Yeah. A lot of fans have first 11 syndrome, don't they? And they pick their first 11s. And the moment they see some of their favourite players being competed against, we get upset, right? So Smith Rowe comes in, 5 or 6 games, scores, assists, top player. We go for Odegaard. What's the first thing that we speak about? But we got Smith Rowe. I'm thinking, mate, Smith Rowe, every time he plays 4 or 5 games, he gets a calf strain. We need Odegaard to allow Smith Rowe to develop at his own pace. We have to grow up and mature and recognize that, right? So just because your favorite player doesn't play for a couple of weeks, it doesn't matter. The key is having another player that when that player comes in, is of a similar quality that we don't cry ourselves to sleep about at the end of a 3-0 loss. Do you see what I mean? We have to get used to the fact of a Smith-Rowe-Odegaard competition. We haven't got to play them both at the same time. Make them share games. They're both young. They're both slight. Now, when Kev played, well, I wasn't worried about him, right? He was a monster, bowling ball rolling down the wing, right? It didn't really matter. I never thought about him at that stage thinking, well, we need to protect him. That's where I was at that stage of my Arsenal watching life. I just thought, well, you're faster than everybody else. You're scoring goals, mate, in the reserve. Do it. Just play all the time. You have to grow up and realise that every now and again, a young player just needs to sit down, not just physically, but there's a huge mental stress about playing football. I cannot say this enough, right? The constant training, the constant scrutiny, the constant review, the constant analysis. Every training session is massive, particularly on the 8v8s. You're competing against a guy in your position. It's massive. I mean, Kev, your boy, I'm sure you watch him in academies. Every training session he walks out, what the coach say to you, what they're saying to you, blah, blah, blah. I've done the same thing. Everything.
I didn't even ask him. because Clive, because I've been there.
Yeah, you know.
He wants to switch off. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He don't want dad in his ear, oh. And that's probably, that's a blessing for me that I can know that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But I totally get what you're saying.
Oh, mate. When my boy was doing it from like age of 10 to 14, he'd get in the car. I'd watch him and then he'd get in the car and the coach would shake his hand. And I'd say, what'd the coach say? He just said, you've done all right. Did you say, did you do really all right? Or was it just all right? Do you know what I mean?
And it was like, she died.
Yeah. Said, no, but yeah, it makes sense.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, I go into Mrs. and say, oh, he said he did all right. I'm not sure though. She said to me, but he told me he did all right. So you don't put pressure on him, but you dissect it yourself, right? But it's a byproduct of the scrutiny young players are on. So when you get a chance to, it's one of the reasons why I'm very careful about how I talk about footballers. You won't see me criticizing somebody in a disrespectful way. There's lots of things happening at the moment regarding how players are spoken about, right? So I may say that our right back needs to stand in his hole a little bit longer and not disconnect too quickly, but I'm not going to slaw him for what he does off the pitch and what he does this and how he has his head or the rest of it. There's a lot of pressure in the game today.
I'm not sure if all of our listeners know, but you're a coach yourself and you're involved in, you know, this game at that deep level, Clive. And so totally understand where you're coming from. And that's why.
I think listening to Clive, they know he's a coach.
I know. Oh, well, great. I don't know. There's a lot of people out there. Newman might not know. I don't want to pick on Newman all the time.
I coach a bit, but actually I try to, I'm like a director of football non-league club. So I try to support the coaches. Do you see what I mean? Coach the coaches rather than I'm bored of the session stuff now. I want to coach the coaches, mentor young players, you know, and help bring them along in that way.
Clive, let's talk about the thing that everybody talks about, every Arsenal fan, Willian. What is going on with Willian?
Right. How can I describe this, right? So, again, I said earlier that I think the problem statement's changed and why we got him. I think he was presented to us as a free option and we took it. I don't agree with sitting or waiting around Chelsea for their older players. I don't agree with that. West Ham used to do it for us. Why are we doing that to Chelsea? Don't like it, right? Here's what it is. We've got him now. So, the problem I have with Willian is not Willian the player, because when he was at Chelsea, I quite liked him. But when I look at him, I'll tell you what I see. I see a different energy to what the other players have, right? So I'll give an example. Thiago, top player, right, at Liverpool. Top, right? One of the best midfielders in the world. The way he plays the game is at a different pace and different energy to the way Liverpool have consistently played the game the last 2-3 years, right? So he's a great player, but he wants to get it. He wants to move it around, go around the horseshoe. They were very direct. So the ball's not going forward, very similar to what we said. The ball's not going forward directly enough. When Salah and Mane are looking to separate away from their man, the ball's not coming. So now they're getting trapped, they're getting boshed, they're getting smashed because people can get near them because they don't know when the ball's coming, right? So same with Willian. I think Willian's not a bad player, but his energy doesn't fit our group, in my opinion, so far. Mm-hmm. And so whether I think he's a decent player or not, because he's a good player, he had a great career at Chelsea, I don't think he fits our club.
Yeah.
And I don't think he fits the dynamic. I just don't see that. I'm not going to sit here and slag him, because what's the point, right? He's here. Arteta didn't play him at the weekend. He hasn't started him for a while. I think you can see the fact it's just a bad fit. And that happens, isn't it? You don't get everything right. Now, we just got to, another thing, I'll steal the phrase, we got to learn how to fail faster, right? So we've got him, we've made a mistake, fail faster, get out of it. Don't carry luggage for 5 or 6 years when you know they're not good enough for you.
I agree with Alcarp here. He has been on the bench since December, so I don't think we can really blame a lot on that. But he was overly played earlier in the season where maybe we could have yielded different results. He upsets the chemistry of the team, Clive, when he comes on. And you're right, culturally, everything has to fit too. We talk about this a lot in the sense that you can come in and be a great player, but culturally, physically, the weight of the badge, because as bad as we are, it's still the Arsenal Football Club, steeped in history, pedigree that comes with a lot of attention. Globally, we're one of the most followed clubs in the world. And we're right up there. As you saw today, there was, I can't remember which outlet released it, but the top 10 richest owners in football. And I think Arsenal Football Club are there in what, 7th or 8th position, and we are still a very important team in the landscape of football that has become irrelevant in the Premier League, right? We can still win FA Cups. We got to a Europa League final. We're still in the Europa League, but in the Premier League, I don't want to sound too harsh here, but we've become mentally impotent and irrelevant. And I think that's the toughest pill for Arsenal fans to swallow. And when you see a player like Pepe come in at 72 million and you want him to be a 72 million pound player, it's not Pepe's fault. We way overpaid for him, probably by 30, 35, 40 million, to be quite honest. So I wanted to circle back with PG's question about Willian, but what about Pepe? What's your thought on him?
It's a bit complex. Do you want to go there? It's a bit complex.
I think we have to go there with you while we have it.
Go there, Clive.
While we have you, because he was playing really well 4 games in a row. We said a lot that he's a form player, he's a confidence player. Once he gets going, let roll the dice, go with him, and then he's benched. So tell us your thoughts on Pep.
How you walk into a room is really important, right? So he was introduced to us as a 72 million pound player. Straight away, we've gone. I don't think anyone calls him Nicola Pepe. We call him 72 million pound Pepe, right? That's what we all do it, don't we? We all do it. So straight away, that says that's our expectation, right? So he's never going to meet the expectation. That deal crept up, shall we say, from the mid 40s, suddenly it was 70. So let's not go there, what happened. But the person who made that deal is no longer at the club. Simple as that, right? So so that's a situation that Arteta's inherited. That player has to inherit. Right, and I think he struggled with it. He's absolutely struggled with it. Now, as a talent, I I genuinely like his talent. I think some of the things that he does are not in the coaching manual. They are just incredible. Some of the things he does badly are also not in the coaching manual. Do you see what I mean? And again, it's that consistency of performance and things leaving his boots. We're just not sure. He's a classic box of chocolates player, right? You're just not sure what you're going to get from him, right? So I like the talent. He needs coaching help. I've heard little things in the club that of all the players that we have, Arteta spends the most time with him, right? And I would absolutely understand that because you get him right, there's a lot there, right? So that won't last forever, you know? You don't want to, you want to see him on him. Apathy is the worst emotion of all. You don't want to see him ignored. Do you see what I mean? He needs to produce, and he is producing. One of the journalists, I think it was James Bench, said something last week about the Man City game. And obviously, we can't see the whole pitch. Do you know what I mean? We can just see the flat screen. And he said, of all of our players, Pepe was the one that was working his nuts off in that game, going everywhere. And I'm thinking, why is he working hard enough to receive the ball? I just couldn't see. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't see on the screen. But I do think there's been a change in effort, performance, attitude and consistency. I think he's worked out what the standards are to play in this team.
I'll tell you what as well, Clive, if I could just add to what you're saying there. Have you noticed whenever we played better, Pepe played better. Whenever Partey's in there and Xhaka's playing with him and playing well, obviously we moved Pepe from the right to the left.
Yeah.
He started playing better.
Yeah.
Why? Because we were getting quick ball to him where he's on the half turn. And as you quite rightly said, he's a one-on-one merchant. Yeah. He wants to be one-on-one with the fullback so he can shimmy him and go by him.
Yeah.
That's how we scored his goal at Southampton. That's how we got him in good positions up further up the pitch. When it's slow and teams could bank up against us,
yep,
he struggles. But a lot of people would struggle because it's very difficult.
Do you guys agree with I just want to put a listener's comment up because we always criticize Pepe. Is that where you were going, Clive, with who he...
I don't like doing this.
Yeah.
But Kev's more or less led me into it, right? So
yeah, I had to, Clive.
Pepe's best game. What are you doing to me, man? And I'll never get invited back. I won't be a log on tomorrow. I'll just sit on my screen and just work. Right, so basically, Pepe's best games have come with Xhaka fizzing the ball into his feet from 25 yards away. Bang. As the ball arrives quickly, you have more time to the person that receives it. Simple, basic football stuff. You know that, right? So on the other side of the pitch, I'm afraid the ball's not coming so quickly unless Partey's playing. And he's in areas. I feel that Bellerin's got such a strong game personality, such a give-and-go person. He's a player that's not so good close to his own goal defensively, but in that middle third, he progresses the ball really well. Think back to the cup final goal, for example, the winning goal. That drive, that's his trick there. That's his trick. And the last third, he's inconsistent for a player that leaves his hole that much. But the thing for me is, he's not actually that good a middle third passer. He hasn't got a long range of pass, so he can't give Pepe the ball with enough time for him to do his stuff. He can also flip and say, Pepe, are you working hard enough to show your boots so you can receive the ball? I'm not sure. I can't see. I want to see. I can't wait to get back in that ground. I want to see. But for people that say, Bellerin is the problem, I think he's part of the problem. And I think the more Pepe's attitude changes, I think people are going to realise that he maybe is a bigger part of the problem than he was previously.
That's really interesting because it's so easy to make scapegoats out of players. I mean, I've ripped him to shreds on this show. I'm not gonna sit here and say I haven't. But I think sometimes we set the team or players up to fail depending on who's playing with them. And this goes a lot to the fact that we still have maybe... This is why I'm of the firm belief that even though I'm not happy with Arteta, he does get the summer, but by October, if we're in the same position in the Premier League, he's got to go. Like, he's got to go. But then trusting him with a, it's not going to be a war chest of money, is it? There's a lot of people in chat, Clive, talking about, well, how much are we going to invest? How much are we going to spend? Are we going to have to do another Emmy and sacrifice a player maybe like Lacazette, who could yield 30 million in the transfer window? I think most fans at this point will be happy to send Bella into PSG for 25 million. Maybe you could get 10 for Chambers because he's a home player and they yield more money. Maitland Niles the same, Willock the same. Give us your sense of how you see that going before we start letting you go on a few things.
Yeah, so, yeah, I have the same FIFA brain going on in my head. You know what I mean? I've got them all sold and bought, and I know exactly what I want to get. It's not always that easy. But I do think what the club has shown in this market in January, I know they have to probably pay some people up because these people are hanging around. It doesn't, they don't just pop off because they want to. Oh, by the way, I'll go, but I want my loyalty bonus, and I want this, and I want that. And you've got to pay part of my wages. So Arsenal probably save, they have saved some, but not as much as what you probably think they've saved, right? But they've made savings. And they're showing us directionally what their goal is. They want a fiscal reset. They want to create room in the squad to be able to reinvest and buy. We don't know by how much because we don't know who's going to go. Those names you mentioned, they're up for grabs. They're up for grabs. You know, we can't let Lacazette go any further. Either we sign him on for a year extension or he goes. Simple as that. There's too much money in that 28, 29-year-old to sit there and walk out the door. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got to get used to that. And this is why I don't feel I'm ready to judge just yet. The last couple of windows have probably been our best windows. Right? Mm-hmm. Would that be fair in recent years?
Oh, I said the January transfer window was our greatest ever, getting rid of all that lot. Absolutely.
So the direction is good. If we sat on our hands and didn't do anything, then I'd be saying, I'd be listening to every word you said, Toph, and I'd be going, you know what? I don't trust. And I don't fully trust. Because why should I? Right? But I can see they've identified the problem. I can see they're not handing out contracts to idiots. You know, people are worried about the holding contract, right? I can see why they did that. If he's number three, number four centre-back, he's our version of Dejan Lovren, for example, that's absolutely fine. He's young. He's 25. He's English. Costs 2 million.
Squad player.
Squad player. Absolutely no problem at all. If you're saying he's the future of Arsenal, he's our John Stones. Well, I've got news for you, right? That's not happening, right? And then people are going to be at the club. Do you see what I mean? And quite rightly, we need to be lifting our levels again. No critique of Holding, who I thought had a dodgy first 15 minutes and then grew into that game at the weekend and started smashing people and ended up really quite strong in the game, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about him, his character, not to be defeated. But he isn't John Stones. Mm-hmm. And we need our version of. It's as simple as that, you know? We need to recognise that. But having him as one of our four centre-backs, I am all on board for that. Do you see what I mean? It's those decisions we have to make, do them. You know, Pablo Marie, quite similar. Third and fourth centre-backs, no problem at all. They've got like 10 million quid between them. That's quite good. But if the new right centre-back is top draw to go with Gabriel, we're all sitting there thinking, that's not bad. Mm-hmm. The next step isn't here for us to fully judge. You know, the kid's out in France. We're not sure. Do we go and buy? We're not sure. So the next step by which we can judge this team is not quite here yet. It's close. It's not quite here yet.
Yeah, you're talking about Saliba there. And I think we all want to see him maybe come back and prove what he can do. What about Torreira and Guendouzi? What do we do with them? Torreira, we're talking maybe he's not really done much at Atletico Madrid, hasn't really been. Have we devalued the value of Guendouzi and Torreira with their loan deals?
I think it's better to loan them than to keep them sitting around devaluing, not playing, if they're not part of the show. Depending on what you want to believe, Torreira never really fully settled in this country. I think his wife or girlfriend is Italian. I don't think she settled. And so that's been a problem almost from the first 6 months. You know, there were rumours in the first 6 months of him not settling.
Such a shame.
It is a shame because as a player, he was quite nice. So I think that's an off-the-pitch problem. Guendouzi. Guendouzi, right, again, he's just
I've got no time for him.
Yeah, I heard that the things that he did when he was away in Dubai were so openly disrespectful to the manager.
Not surprised.
There was absolutely no choice, no choice whatsoever. They had to get him out. And that is a shame, because as a footballer, he's not bad. He's not bad. And it's the sort of player you buy for seven, sell for 25 in 2 years. And that's the sort of thing we need to do to regenerate this club, right? So it's those sort of buyers we want to see more of. It hasn't quite worked out. And he's, I watched Hertha Berlin at the weekend and he was on the bench. He's on the bench for Hertha Berlin. So let's not pretend they're both ripping it up. You know,
No, they're not. Okay, Clive, we're going into Sophie time now. It's called extra time, but they call it Sophie time. And it's our listeners are to blame because they're loving you. Do you have 3 minutes to do 10-second answers on some facts or myths?
I don't have a choice for you lot, do I?
No.
It's looking at me saying, she's only asking that question for content.
No, I mean, I genuinely want to know. I really do, right? So we've got a little facts or myths here, okay? And there's a lot of facts about the Arsenal, but there's a lot of myths as well. Hit fact or myth, Arteta has improved Arsenal since taking over.
I would say fact, just fact. And I think you can't answer that question without talking about the extenuating circumstances. But I think we play a more modern brand of football. I don't look at him and think we're not playing what everyone else is doing. And I think that's only going to get better.
I'm going to have KC answer real quick too, and Amanda. Fact or myth that he's improved, KC?
Fact.
Fact. You knew we'd say that.
I think it's a bit of a myth, but I think you guys knew I was going to say that. Thank you, South London Arsenal, for agreeing. Okay, Clive.
Just put out the ones you want to see.
She does. She always puts out the ones she wants.
I know your game.
I can see how many facts are coming out. Don't worry.
I'm going to put facts up. There's a few.
Exactly, Virginia. That's what I was going to say on the defensive side. Fact. Yeah.
And get everyone's up. Okay. So fact. You got some facts. Look at you guys. Look at you.
Come well on, done. So let's get going.
Okay. Here we go. We're going to close this out. The Kroenkes are to blame for everything that is wrong with the Arsenal. Fact or myth?
And to quote David Ornstein, this failure has many fathers, right? And we need to go back maybe 4 or 5 years. The Kroenkes have been here since 2009. They set the tone. The tone they've set, while it was dual ownership with Usmanov, was a tone of drift, right? So simple as that. Since they've been in charge, we've seen more action. Some of those actions have been incorrect. I think the tone comes from the top. It comes from the top. And there's a lot for them to answer, is all I will say.
Casey?
So listen, we're in this because it's a fact. It's not a myth, it's a fact. We could argue, but it's a fact. We are in this under their stewardship. So,
yeah.
I think it's a fact, but there's also a tiny little bit that it's not all them. So I'm going 95% fact, if you know what I mean.
Just a couple more here. Clive, Arsenal Football Club lost their soul when they moved to the Emirates. Fact.
They lost. Sorry, some. See, I'm one of these people that looks forward. So, I think we lost something, but we can't sit back and say that, you know, that ground it done its time. Do you know what I mean? It's done, we weren't able to expand on it, and it's a shame. It's such a shame because we all grew up there. Well, I grew up there. That's so it's hard to leave that behind. But we got to look forward, right?
I know what PG and KC want. So here's, I'll get you out on this one. Fact or myth, Arsenal Football Club can win the Premier League again in the next 3 to 5 years?
I would say it's hard, right? Because we all...
I might play the Jeopardy music for you.
I'd say... At this moment in time, I can only answer as a myth, really. It could happen, but I need to know more. I need to know more, and I'll know more by the summer. I will know a lot more on the pace by which they're moving. Right? I think this is all about pace. You know, how aggressive are we going to be? And I'm not sure yet until the summer.
All right. In a nutshell, KC, fact or myth?
Well, I want it to be a fact, so it's got to be a fact for me. I've got to think positive. Arteta isn't in, and then backing him in a certain way, allowing him to get rid of people, pay them out of the football club to create that space for nothing. There's a plan. And if you remember signing certain players, he was the defining factor. Getting a Gabriel in, you know, getting a Thomas Partey in his vision and what was to come. So I've got to say yes. Fact.
PG? 3 to 5, maybe 4 to 6, I would say. But I'd love it to be, obviously, we all would. But fact, 4 to 6 years.
I might go with Newman here. If Leicester can, anyone can, I suppose. Absolutely. But that's all depending on having the right players, the right philosophy, the right manager. There still needs so much to fall into place. I think it is not a myth that Clive from Arsenal Vision Pod was absolutely stellar tonight.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Can I say one last thing? Well, a couple of last things, right?
So, sure. I mean, now you're in your time. I'm off the hook now.
We're in Clive's time.
Right, so... I always say this, like, football is like a village, right? And within the game, everyone you listen to, they're talking about Arteta, it is so positive about him. Even before he came, it was so positive. Even when he was going through it before Christmas, there was hardly any dissentive voices within the game. And I sometimes have to, there is a game out there that I'm not in. That bloke there in the corner has been in it, right? And there is a game, there are things that happen behind closed doors, within the football family, there are chatter. And people think this guy is good. There, I will definitely give him that. And one last thing. I was worried about coming on, right? I have to say, because I'm a bit quiet. But I have to say, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I knew you would. I told you. We
don't buy it all the time.
It's just me, right? I'm adding those what I'm like, right? So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think you guys do a great job. I've listened to some of your shows and you've got a lovely tone by how you approach it. And I think, please keep it going. And, I'll definitely come back if you want me back to come on.
Definitely. We appreciate that. We take, you know, a lot of the times it's about our guests. It's not about us. Mm. We've got the legend KC in the house from the player perspective, which adds another layer. But, you know, that one, we take the tone and the personality and the character of the guest, and it's about your feelings and your thoughts and your opinions. And our listeners, we try to give them as much of a voice as we have. So we really, really appreciate it. And I love the tone tonight. And it was a really phenomenal football conversation. Brilliant cool. stuff.
And I don't have to nag you anymore to come on, do I, Clive?
No. Just I need about 20 or 30 WhatsApps and then I'll be there. Right? I haven't got an ego, honestly.
But one thing I will say, Clive, is the way you broke a lot of the explanations down for the fans in chat was brilliant. And I'm sure people who watch this, he's going to marvel at the way how articulate you were explaining certain stuff. I think that was really, really impressive. For me, it was impressive. I've got to say that. So brilliant, mate.
You even kept KC quiet.
I can see him smiling. He knows.
A lot of the time you're talking, I'm nodding. I'm thinking, what? Knows. This guy got it, man.
Major point of difference in how you described everything. Totally agree with KC. Mm-hmm. Like, even I, who am mad at Arteta right now, but I'm also mad at the players. Yeah. You know, there's sometimes you just have to have like an even keeled kind of, okay, let's hear when you dig a little deeper. And so, yeah, it was great stuff. Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on, Clive.
Thank you, Clive.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Cheers.
I have to say, I'm going to, well, let me help you here, Clive. I'll get you out. There you go, babe.
It's gone.
I have to say, you know, that was brilliant. That was a great football conversation. And
I did tell you, didn't I, that we have to get him on.
Oh, for crying out loud. Well, yes.
Yes.
All right. Well done, PJ. Can we move on?
Jesus. Harangued all these people to come on our pod. Everyone loves it.
We've had some great people on the show. And I have to say, like, this is what I love about our show is we have so many diverse voices. You know, some come in hot, some come in chill, and some come in from a coach point of view. And, you know, for KC to say what he just said too, like, and for KC to kind of really be listening, and the way he broke it down, Kev, it was pretty, pretty amazing,
it was
right?
Impressive. It was impressive. Yeah, impressive. Definitely very yeah. good.
He's
very
always good. Been like that. He's always very cool, very calm, and he's very. You just sit there and you just listen. It's just great. And whether you agree with him or not, you just can't shout at him, can you? You just yeah. can't.
He's got a nice tone, isn't he?
Oh, he's yeah. got a nice voice.
Tone I mean, yeah. I think you guys all notice too that most of our hot shows are after a game, and this is why sometimes yeah. we say. Maybe we should wait and go on 2 hours later versus right after the game because, you know, we come in hot and that's part of the passion and the character of this show as well.
But never from change
our,
it.
Never change never it. From our,
no,
never
but we do lots it. Of different shows. Some are calmer, some are...
Yeah, the player profile, the inside the dressing room. Tomorrow night we're going to have the player profile and we're going to do Saka and a good friend of the show that you guys read a lot of his stuff from Gunners Town and he writes a lot for the national press as well. Dave Seeger is going to come on mm-hmm. who's seen a lot of Saka too. KC's working the Barcelona game tomorrow. PG starting a new job. So she's going to be busy for the next couple days. But, you know, that's what we like to do here. And the lockdown series, I have to say, has been amazing and you guys have been amazing. And without all of you in chat, we wouldn't be able to do this. I know you want 2 hours, but I can't. I mean, I would, but we're not going to do that. I do have to do some laundry before we go. Our good friends at Football Prizes, this is it. People are going to love this one or not like it at all. You ready?
Go on.
It's Arsene Wenger this week, Casey.
No, well, you know what? No, you know what? It's still a collector's item, isn't it? Let's be fair.
Yeah, it is. And
it is.
And you can win this signed and framed Arsenal pennant. You can go in and buy your ticket for only $4.95. I'm going to give away a free ticket on the show on Thursday. So listen out for that. You'll get your number and your name will go into the auction. I am determined that this week, a listener from this show yes, is going to win the auction, you guys. Yes.
Come on, yes. the hybrid squad, right. squaddies.
So let's make it happen. Go over to footballprizes.co.uk and get your ticket and then listen out for a free ticket on the show. Right.
And if they win, they've got to tell us. Come on Twitter or
They will.
Instagram.
We'll get their picture.
We need to know.
We'll get their picture and we put it up. So, yes. All right, let's go watch some Champions League football, shall we? And KC, anything else to add?
No. It was a good show with you yesterday, and this was another good show with obviously PG on and Clive. I thought it was very good for the people in chat and viewers. So
it.
Brilliant, yeah. brilliant.
Cool.
Are we going to do? Go on.
I was going to say I've got some great responses from last night's Monday Madness show for Kevin's segment on Friday. So we'll just leave it at that for now. Go on, PG.
Benfica, because Kevin and I are not on until, God knows, he's not on until Friday. So let's do the Benfica.
Oh, maybe Thursday I'm doing, we should do a post-game show. Anyway, go on.
Post-game
show, Kev. Are you around for that, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm working tomorrow. I ain't working Thursday night. I'm on for the post-game.
Let's do a prediction.
I don't
then.
Know yet, but let's do a prediction. Is this our home game? I'm confused.
Yeah.
So this is in Greece. Yeah.
This is our home game.
Opa.
Opa.
let's have they don't have a meze before they go out. Okay. So this is our home game. So it's 1-1 at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. Correct. Mm. We have an away goal technically.
Yeah. We do, but I always like to play away. Okay, let's go Arsenal 2-1.
I'm going to go 2-0 Arsenal.
Wait, if we go 2-1, 2-1, so then we'll win because it was 1-1, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go for it, you guys. I'm going to really go for it.
Oh, my God.
Arsenal Football Club.
I was going to say Arsenal 4. Oh,
4-1 to the Gunners.
Is he going to get another hat-trick?
I think it's going to be a mix. I think there's going to be a few players that show up.
Shared all over the place.
We have to win this. I tell you, this is going to say everything about the character of this Arteta team. When the chips are down, can they deliver for the manager? They did it in the FA Cup last season. Can they do it against Benfica under the lights of the Athenians and the legends and the gods of Greece?
And then... Not that we're going to discuss it now because she's so dramatic. And then the worst thing ever, we've got to play an in-form Leicester at midday.
Oh, we'll do that Friday.
I know, but I just hate it.
Bring it on. Fear nobody.
Do me a favour, Leicester. They're just brilliant at the moment.
For God's sake.
Midday. We don't turn up at midday.
We're going to panic about it. Bring it on.
Score prediction to you guys. 5-0, 4-1, 3-0.
Really?
Everyone's feeling it.
Have
you know why?
I've been conservative with my 2-1.
So they're all going with you. I love it. But look.
The Greek gods have galvanised.
This is Arsenal you're talking about. They're going 4-0, 3-0. Are they mental?
The Greek flag out as well. Come on.
Love it. Come on, the Gunners.
Let's go, the Gunners. This is now or never for this team. It's time to put up or shut up. It's the Europa League or bust. And I think, for some crazy reason, as critical as I've been, I feel like they're going to be ready for this game. I really do. Dear God. I haven't even had a drink yet.
A bit of ouzo, darling.
Have a little bit of ouzo. All
no
right,
one's
then.
Having ouzo. No one. None of our players.
It's a bit strong. Well, we can. All right, listen. That's it.
We're done.
Let's close.
Another show. Another day. Another dollar.
Well, not a dollar, really. We didn't make any money. Just saying.
Yeah, just saying. We do all this for nothing. And we never ask for any donations, and you don't have to pay to talk to us. But hey-ho.
Hello, we're waiting on you, Amanda.
Yeah, come on.
I'm sorry. I normally get introduced for the last bit.
Okay, Casey.
Whoa.
I know.
Hold on a minute. What's going on here?
She
been away that long? God, just do it, woman.
Just do it.
Hold on a minute.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Please hit the like button. Please subscribe. And thank you to all those that helped me get us over 6,000 followers on Twitter. Fantastic. So proud of you all. Thank you for your help. Right. Have a good evening. Always Arsenal.